Greetings in Jesus' name this morning. The one who has called us to be sons and daughters of God in the midst of our limited abilities and has given us a platform to reach the world with the children that he has given to us. We're glad to be here this weekend, and we were here 16 years ago when our daughter was two, and it's a long ways from Minnesota to come here for a weekend, and so, yeah, we're glad to be back here again today. I had thought this is something I would like to start in the Midwest, and there's just too many good things to do in life, and I have not gotten that accomplished yet. We live up on the northern edge of Minnesota, right up on the Canadian border. We have six children. Three of them are married, and three of them are here today. And we are, I jokingly told Katina when I heard that Anthony was coming to speak, I said, well, you'll have to tell Anthony that he has to let you come over here to take care of Grant while they're here. And so we're very blessed to have Katina here this weekend and get to connect with her a little bit. 18 years ago, we had four active, joyful children. And the worst problem we had was probably they didn't obey right away when we told them to do something. Life was pretty easy. We probably forget how easy it was. But on that cold January morning when it was 26 below and took my wife to the hospital and we had a little girl and someone mentioned that they noticed the nurse was looking twice, and I too noticed that the doctor was very careful in her observations, but we didn't think much of it. An hour later, the doctor came back in and gently, we had a good doctor, gently told us that she thinks we have a daughter with Down syndrome. And we've been introduced into a new world like many of you. And I told my wife the other day, I said, I think I'm turning into a weeping prophet. And my emotions are very close to the surface sometimes. And I probably have to credit our daughter and the things that we've gone through. So if I become a weeping prophet this morning, you just have to bear with me. I've been touched this morning already. And our life story has changed. And instead of going to Italy, we went to Holland, as the story reads. And instead of being a minister whose children are older and on their own, and my wife and I can travel and I can minister in places, we now have other responsibilities and we take people with us. And this world is not a bad world. It's just a different world. And you know what? Kendra probably has as good of a ministry when I go for a week of meetings as I do. Like, she connects with people. We took her to Indiana last summer for a weekend, and halfway there I told my wife, I said, why did we bring her along? Like, why didn't we? Like, we should have had a weekend to ourselves. But we got there, and she had a blast. I didn't even see her all weekend. You know, she's off with her friends, and she's her friends from Bible school, these friends here, and she knows ministers and their wives and their children, and she has a connection. And so it's not the way we planned it, but it's different. Thank you very much, ma'am. You know what? You are just like my daughter. Every Sunday at home, she makes sure we have water on the pulpit. So thank you for that. Instead of seeing families with special needs children, we are now a family that has, we're in that circle as well. And we'll always have a little girl at home. And this has been, I think everything I'm going to say this morning, I've heard already, okay? It's like, you guys keep saying it all, okay? I think it's all been said. But the thing we've probably grieved the most is that we will never have that chance to be just the two of us and with as older people. When Kendra was first born, we had a song that we called Kendra's Song. God never moves without purpose or plan when making a servant or whatever that was. And then the chorus says, "Oh, rejoice in the Lord, he makes no mistakes. For he knoweth the end of each path that I take. For when I am tried and purified, I shall come forth as gold." And I think we as parents probably don't give our children enough credit for the lessons that we've learned in life and the things that we've gone through. I teach at Maranatha Bible School, and one of my students a couple years ago went home and told her dad that there was a Tony Zook there, and him and his wife have gone through some things, and you know, she said, they've come out as gold. Well, he works for Christian Aid Canada, and my sister works for, her and her husband work for DRS in the United States, and he told her, he made the connection with her that I was a brother or whatever, and she told me, that's how I found out. But you know what? If God can use this situation in my life, this hardship that we face, hardship in quotes, that we face, and if it makes us as gold and makes us more useful in his kingdom, then may all glory go to him. It's not about us. We fail. We struggle. We reach for that hand sometimes and we don't know if it's there. But God does. And God has been faithful to us this morning. And so we're all probably different places in our journey. And I want to be an advocate, and Dave and Mary Lapp were here yesterday, and when Kendra was just a baby, we were at their place. And so we asked Dave, "So Dave, how'd it go?" Well, he said he was really bummed out. Until he went to an Amishman's house, one of his customers, and they told him he has a son with Down syndrome, and he said the guy just lit up. And Dave said he didn't have a child that was one you were really proud of, but he just lit up and was so glad that Dave had a child with Down syndrome. And there was another dad there, and he had just a newborn. And we said, "Willie, how's it going for you?" "Well," he says, "after I talk to Dave, it's okay." And you know what? It is okay. And sometimes we need to cheer each other on. And like Anthony said, those people, when you hear about it, we got letters from people we didn't know any, knew nothing about. And we got letters of encouragement. And there's someone here this weekend, I don't know which one of you it was, but they came and said, "You know what? When we had our child, your wife sent us a letter." Okay? That's a good thing. Kendra's just starting to identify herself as having Down syndrome. We've told her that before, and it didn't get much traction. We were in Ireland this spring, and Grant was there, and Sophie was there, and Sophie says it's not Down syndrome, it's Up syndrome. And so we had the Up syndrome picture while we were there, and it's been fun to identify that from Kendra's point of view. So I was going to get adventuresome this morning, and I asked Steve, I said, "Steve, can I have a children's meeting with the children with Down syndrome up front?" And he's like, "Well, let me think about that." And he says, like, "Sure." And the longer this weekend went, the more I was like, "Boy, oh boy, I think maybe that, I don't know if that's a good idea or not, okay?" Like, it's going to look a little like that picture we tried to have up here yesterday. So I'm not going to have children's meeting, but I am going to talk to the children a little bit this morning. So where's my friend that was giving me grief here yesterday? I don't think he's here today. He's like, "Who are you, Moses with your rod?" Well, yeah, I am Moses with my rod. I went and found this here yesterday. So this morning, I would like to talk about Moses a little bit. And I want to talk specifically to you as people, as young people, as children who have Down syndrome, okay? So if you want to listen to this, this is why I want to talk to you this morning. So what can you tell me about Moses? Can anybody tell me anything about Moses? Any of the other children have anything you can tell me about Moses?
God.
Well, he was a friend of God, okay, yep. What else could you tell me about Moses?
Murderer.
Huh, he was a murderer. Oh, okay. Well, he was. Grant, do you know who Moses was? Yeah? He was a baby. What about him when he was a baby? He was born. Where did his mom put him?
In a basket.
In a little basket under the sky so blue. You know that song? Yeah, okay. And then who raised him? Who raised baby Moses? Did his mom raise him? Yeah. Where did he live after he got older? He lived in the palace with the king. Okay, the king's daughter. Now here's an interesting one. You as parents put this together. He was born during a time when people who were boys like him were being killed because the king thought that the boys that looked and acted like him were a problem. That's the world we live in today. And that's where Moses lived. And they didn't want him around. They hid him for a few months. He lived with Pharaoh's daughter. But you know what? Moses tried to do a job he couldn't do. Did you know that? Do you know what Moses tried to be? Moses tried to be a policeman. He was. Kevin, you have some jobs you do. You do, don't you? Mm-hmm. Are there some things you can't do? Did your dad let you drive the car? Do you let him drive the car? Not yet, okay. And Moses tried to do something he wasn't supposed to do yet. He tried to be a policeman. And he went out and killed the bad guy. He's like, oh, you're the good guy, you're the bad guy, I'm going to kill the bad guy. And he killed the bad guy. And that was not what he was supposed to do. And so then the king got mad at him, and he had to run away and to save his life. And he went in the desert, and he worked for Jethro. Now, Jethro was a farmer, and Jethro had sheep. And Moses' job was to take care of the sheep. And for 40 years, he took his rod, and he walked around in the desert and took care of sheep. Now, do you think Moses liked to take care of sheep?
Yes.
Maybe. Do you think Moses wished he could have done something better than take care of sheep? Maybe he still wanted to be back in Egypt. Maybe he wished he still lived in the palace. But there he was in the wilderness taking care of sheep. And I would just like to challenge you as young people with Down syndrome that there are some things in life that you just won't get to do. You can't always do the things you want to do. But there are things that you can do. Don't do the things God didn't call you to yet. Don't try. I ask, where's Kyle at? Kyle, where are you at? There he is, he's over there. He was telling me that he gets to drive the truck empty out of the woods. But he doesn't get to drive it loaded yet. Is that correct? Okay, but he would like to drive it loaded. Okay, well, there's some things we get to do and some things not yet. And some things maybe someday, but maybe never. But God has given you something you can do. You can drive the truck empty, can't you? And that's a lot of fun, isn't it? Okay? Tim, do you have some chores to do at home? Yeah. Do you have a job? You do. Good for you. I'm glad you have a job. You have something you can do. I know Kevin has a job. He told me he washes dishes at a restaurant. Okay? That is something that is your calling that you can do that God has given to you today. And our daughter has, you know what our daughter does? She had a young mother call and say, could Kendra come one day a week and help take care of children at my house? And they had three children under two and under. Now, you would think that maybe Kendra would be more work. She's diabetic, and you got to watch this, and you got to watch that. But you know what? Brittany loves to have Kendra come. It's just the highlight of their week when Kendra comes over there, and Kendra loves her, and they give her $10 a day. And they live 20 miles away, and so you got to drive 40 miles in the morning and 40 miles at night, and she gets $10. Okay, put all that together. But Kendra loves it. She's having a blast. And she is meeting a need in our community. You are doing a good thing. And even though maybe you wish you weren't just taking care of sheep, or you wish you could drive the car, or you wish you could do this, God has given you something. And you know one of the best things I think God has given you as children with Down syndrome? A smile. You should have seen Kendra's smile the first day she went to work at Hardee's. Oh, it was the biggest smile. I love your smiles. And God loves your smiles. And so, we're going to talk about Moses this morning. And you can keep listening along. I got to tell you this yet. So Kendra, when she was a few years younger, she had one goal in life. And that was to work at the grocery store and to have a cell phone. And I said, that's not going to happen. Well, she recently got a cell phone, partially because she's diabetic and it connects to her equipment. But you know what? She's getting old enough that she can kind of do those things. And she works at Hardee's at a fast food restaurant. We can drop her off there. But one day she came into my office and she said, after I had a big conversation with Katina about going to Bible school and how we're going to make enough money for that and whatever, and Kendra wanted to be like her big sister, and she comes in with her piece of paper too, and she said, I clean bathrooms and you pay me dollars. Okay. And then she said, and when I get old, I'm going to teach school. Because, see, Krista taught school in Grenada, and Carl taught school in Wisconsin, and now Katina's teaching school, and so that's just what you would do, right? And there's some things in life that we just say, well, like marriage for a while, we just said, well, we'll wait and see once what God has for you. And kind of pushed it off, and now we're kind of squashing that one too, But this school one, I was like, I think maybe we should just squash it right away. And I just said, you know what? I think maybe God has a different plan for you. She sits there a little bit and says, aw, rats. And that was the end of the conversation, and away we went. But God does have a plan. And I might not be teaching school, and I might not be driving a log truck, but God has a plan for you. And so God had a plan for Moses. But it wasn't being the policeman. It wasn't what he wanted to do. It's what God wanted him to do. Okay, so that's the end of my children's meeting. If you have your Bibles this morning, to turn to Exodus chapter 3. Exodus chapter 3. Begin reading in verse 7. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. And I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of the land unto a good land, and unto a large, unto a land flowing with milk and honey, unto the place of the Canaanites, and the Hittites, and the Amorites, and the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel have come unto me, and I have also seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppress them. Come now therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. So we think of the land of Egypt as an oppressive land where the Jews lived, and we often think of the story of the children of Israel and their specific need. But God looks at the world at large. Like, God didn't care just for the Jews. He also cared for the souls of the Egyptians. And so when he sent Moses to... He looked at this land where they were oppressed, but he also looked at the oppressors and people who did not know of him, did not know of his plan, of his goodness. And so while God had a plan for the Jews to take them out, he also had a plan for the Egyptians that they too would hear. And if we look at a little later on, it talks about there was a mixed multitude with them after they left. And those were the Egyptians that believed and went out with them. And God had a man in mind to do this work. And he was Moses. Now just think of his qualifications as a man for this work. So first off, he was raised by a godly mother, such as they knew in those days. He was parented, he was loved, he bonded with his mother, his family, he was cared for. And then he left there and he went to the palace where he was the son of the princess, and we're assuming he had some of the best education in the world at the time. If you think about the things they did in Egypt, just think of the pyramids, how large they are. How do you make a perfect pyramid that is perfect in all of its attributes? Like, I do construction. I wouldn't even know how to do that today. Like, I'm thinking, well, I don't know. Would I set up a laser? You know, hang one up there? Well, how do I hang a laser that high in the air? Well, they didn't have lasers. So how would you do that? Like, how would you go about building this whole thing? And I'm told they would, at night, the priests, who were the smart people or whatever, they would come out at night with a sextant and they would look at the stars, and that's how they formulated all these things that they did. They were really intelligent. And Moses was a student of that. He was educated there. He would have possibly even been educated in the army as a general. We don't know that, but he would have been in the king's family. It would have been would have been out of line that he would have had those kind of training. He would have had logistical skills. He would have had organizational skills. And then he went to the desert for 40 years, and he learned how to find green grass in the desert. And he learned how to survive in the desert, and he learned how to live out there because he was going to have to take people out there for 40 years. He knew how to do that. And that's the man that God chose for this job of leading his people out of Israel. And Moses, he's like us. He was the most willing servant of the Lord. Sure, Lord, if that's what you want us to do, we'll be happy to do it. Is that what he said? No, he's like, why me? Like, why do I have to do this? His first question actually was, who are you? So, you're talking to me from the burning bush. Who are you? Like, how do I know you're important? How do I know? Like, when I go back to Egypt and there's the all these different gods, which one are you? And God says, well, I'm the holy God. I'm the complete God. I'm the capable God. I'm the all-knowing God. I'm the God of your father Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I am the God that has a plan for you. I am a God that made you, that redeemed you, that called you. I am the God that never moves without purpose or plan. That's the God. That's who I am. And I have a job for you to do, Moses. And Moses says, well, they won't believe me. If I tell them that, they're not going to believe me. And we'll come back to that point a little later. His next excuse was, well, but I can't talk. Like, I can't communicate well. Maybe he was not eloquent. Maybe he couldn't put things together well. We know he was a brilliant man because he wrote the first five books of the Bible. Like, we know he was, well, whatever. Maybe he stuttered. You know anybody that stutters in your life? Can God use them? Yeah. He says, I can't do that. And then his last excuse was, he's like, well, I'm not going to do that, but whoever you want to, you just call them, and you just call whoever you want, okay? And the Bible says that the anger of the Lord was kindled against him. Like, God says, I know who I want. Like, it's you, and you're not doing it. He had all kinds of excuses why he was not fit to do this job that God had called him to do. So turn page or so in your Bible to chapter 4, and I would like to kind of capitalize on verses in this first part of this chapter here this morning. This is kind of where I want to take my theme from. Exodus 4 and verse 1, and Moses answered and said, but behold, they will not believe me nor hearken unto my voice, for they will say, the Lord hath not appeared unto thee. And the Lord said unto him, What is that in thine hand? And he said, A rod. And he said, Cast it on the ground. And he cast it on the ground, and it became a serpent. And Moses fled from before it. And the Lord said unto Moses, Put forth thine hand, and take it by the tail. And he put forth his hand, and caught it by the tail, and it became a rod in his hand. And then God says, and this is why, that they may believe that the Lord God of their fathers, of the God of Abraham, and the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, hath appeared unto me. I have given you a rod, or rather, I want you to take the rod that you have so that they may believe. So that they may believe what? Well, they might believe that I am their God. That they might believe that I'm the God that made them. That they might understand who the God is that's calling them to come to Him. And we don't know how much knowledge they had of God anymore. You know, they've been there 400 years. And 400 years is a long time. You know, we think our country has been here a long time. It's been here, what, 250 years? And there's a lot of things. We know the history of our country and what they used to be and what they are now. And a lot has happened in that time. And this is 400 years. We don't know how much they knew about God anymore. Maybe they were assimilated into the Egyptian culture. In fact, we can probably believe that they are, because once they get to the wilderness, they make themselves a calf and said, This is the God that brought you out of Egypt. Okay, like that's their belief. And God says, No, I want you to use what you have in your hand so that they will believe on who I am. I want you to go evangelize the world with a rod in your hand. That's basically what he was saying. And the call that Moses had is the same call that we have today as sons and daughters of God. Our call, our mission, is to reach out to the world around us. If you want, you may turn to Matthew 28. This is at the end of Jesus' ministry, 28 and verse 18. And Jesus came and spake unto them and said, All power is given unto me in heaven and in earth. So, just like Moses, I'm powerful. I have a rod for you. I have something you can use. And here's what I want you to do. Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Ghost, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. And sometimes we feel like maybe we've reached the end of the world before we're at. And God says, No, I'm with you in that. That is what God is calling us to do today. Just like Moses. God said, Moses, I want you to go to the children of Israel and I want you to tell them about me. And I want you to tell them that I can do great things for them, and I'm going to deliver them out of this land of oppression. I'm going to take them to the promised land, and I'm going to give you a land of milk and honey. And he said, Well, they won't believe me. Well, that's your job, Moses. You go tell them that. One of my favorite passages, one of my passions, is that, so as a minister, I have a passion for godly, vibrant churches. I'm not satisfied just to show up in church on Sunday morning and come and hear me preach and go home and do your job all week and come back the next Sunday. There's more to the Christian life than that. There's more to the Church of Jesus Christ than that. And we have a mission for the world. And so, in John 17, this is what Jesus said, and this is my passion for our church, for your church. And guess what? If your church is anything like my church, it's a lot of work. It's not as easy as it sounds, okay? But we're trying. But John 17 and verse 20. Neither pray I for these alone, not just for the disciples, but for all them also which shall believe on me through their word, that they all may be one, as thou, Father, art in me, and I in thee, that they also may be one in us. Why? Why does God want us united? Why does God want us to be this group that's knit together? So that, I lost my spot. So that, end of verse 21, that the world may believe that thou hast sent me. That is the mission of the church. That is the reason. When we have a church that's knit together and is like, we love each other and we care for each other, and we have a little cosmos of that here today, like we have this common bond around our families, but our churches should be the same way. And the point is, so that the world can see. Moses, I have a job for you to do. I want you to go in there and I want you to use what you have in your hand. I want you to use your rod so that they may believe, so that they can go to the land of milk and honey. That's my job that I have for you, Moses. That is the call of the church. We are the sons and daughters of God, and we're not the sons and daughters of God so that we can ride the train to glory, but we're the sons and daughters of God, and we have a mission to bring more with us and to load that train. That's what we're to accomplish. We are called to be lights that are not hid under a bushel. We're called to be a light on a hill. We're called to be a city of light in a dark world. That is what we are called to be. That is the call of the church. That's our motivation. And sometimes we're a little like Moses and we really don't want to do that. Or we have an excuse or two. Like, well, Lord, I can't do that. But God had some simple questions. God said, Moses, what's that in your hand? Well, it's a rod, Lord. I had a rod I want to bring from home. That's my well-used one I had for 20 years in my tool trailer. I use the tamp holes, you know. It's worn, it's polished, whatever. Yeah, Lord, I just have this rod, you know. It's dirty and it smells like sheep and it's kind of whatever, you know. I use it to, you don't want to touch the bottom of it. You know where that's been for the last while. And yeah, that rod, Lord, that's, that you were talking about? Yeah, Moses, that one. The one that you got when you had to run away from Egypt. Remember, you had to go out and start taking care of sheep, and you picked up that rod, and you've kind of polished it, and it fits your hand really good, and you know where all the indentations are. It's interesting. I just got this yesterday, and I was standing out here last night after I got it, before I hit it away. You know, I already know which way to turn it, and it fits best in my hand. Yeah, that rod. The one that you're familiar with. You understand what to do with it. That job. That rod, Moses. I have a job for you to do. But I can't do that, Lord. Like, I can't reach out to the children of Israel. What's in your hand, Moses? Well, Lord, I don't have much. You know we spend $200 a month on medication. Or you know, like, we're just poor, Lord, and we spend all of our time here taking care of our children, and you know, we don't have much money, and the therapists are coming today, and I don't have time to minister to anybody. And the Lord said, Moses, what's in your hand? There's therapists coming to your house today. Do you think maybe you could be a little light to the therapists? Do you think they could see what a Christian home would be like? Do you think they could observe the way your children are well-behaved or not well-behaved or whatever the case may be? You think they could do that, Moses? But Lord, Moses, what's in your hand? Lord, I never wanted to go to the public school today. Like, I never wanted. We stay long, far away from the public school. We don't go there. And I really don't have time to go there 2 days a week for speech therapy. It's 20 minutes down there and 20 minutes home, and I got to go sit there. And what am I supposed to do, Lord? Well, what's in your hand, Moses? Why don't you take some crocheting along, and you could sit in the library and say hi to the neighbor kids that go by. You know them. And you know the librarian there. You know her. You could talk to her. And the teachers that come through. And then there's Steve, the bus driver. You know, he's the the tutor, and you could talk to him. But my Lord, and you know what? What's that in your hand? You know, the world maybe thinks that you're a Mennonite and you have everything all well put together, and you have your nice house and a nice car and your nice family, and maybe they just need to see that we're needy people too. And maybe they just need to see that we weep sometimes too. That's Moses, that's what I want you to take. But Lord, no one even knows who I am. Like, no one even cares. Like, I'm just a nobody. Like, who notices me? Yes, Moses. You're noticed. You're the mom with that Down syndrome girl, aren't you? Aren't you that? Didn't I see you with the girl with Down syndrome? You know, the short one with the big smile on her face. That's who you are, right? Well, who are you? Well, you don't know who I am, but I know who you are. Yes, Moses, that's the rod I want you to have. But you don't know our challenges. You don't know our disabilities. You don't understand that we had orthotics and scoliosis and diabetes, and all those appointments are 200 miles away. We live in way up in the north, remember? And we got to drive 200 miles, and my wife doesn't really like doing those things, and she's getting really good at going to the city and going to all these places. And no, that's not really what I wanted to do. And you don't understand how we feel stretched and how we feel like we're so focused on one child. And we have other children that we care for our other children. And we have grandchildren. And we can't just go drop what we want to do, because we have. And God says, take the rod that you have. No one will believe me, Lord. I'm just too tired. Besides, we're just too tired. Someone said yesterday, they said, you know, our ministry sometimes is just like God has given us a ministry. And sometimes we forget that this is the ministry that God has given us. And we want to be useful. But that's the ministry that God has given us. What's in your hand? What do you have that God has given you today to make you useful for His kingdom, to bring people to Him? And God has given us all a hand that is full of potential. I thought of telling you to just reach over and hold your child's hand. What's in your hand? God has given you a tool. God has given you potential. God has called you to be lights. And He's called you to be a light on the hill in a city that is not hid under a bushel. And guess what? We have a tool to do that. We get people's attention. And they're watching us to see, how do we do this? And how do we love our children? And how, you know, the best advice we ever got was, treat your child just like every other child. And they can learn anything. It just takes longer. Oh, which is really, okay, yeah, that's fine. I can eventually learn how to, you know, Kyle's learning how to drive a truck. It just takes longer. Kendra's learning how to drive a golf cart. My mom's teaching her, like my unadventuresome mom is teaching her to drive golf cart. And okay, it's a little leery, but you can do it, okay? But guess what? It also takes longer for discipline. And longer to say, yes, Daddy, I'm coming, and to obey. But guess what? When we do that, we have a platform to the world, and they look on and say, wow. And it's not about us. It's about Jesus Christ. And God has given us a platform to share the truth with the world around us. We're not beaten down. It's not that we don't have any possibilities in life. We're not doomed to this whatever. No, we've been elevated to a position that we have tools and ways to be a light to those around us. Like Dave Lapp says, you know, life is still good. Life still goes on. My sister took care of a boy with cerebral palsy for a couple years before Kendra was born, and probably did a really good job of preparing our children for special needs. They were used to being around Ben and his chair and so on. And Ben had no control. The only thing he could control was his eyes. And so you would ask him a question. If it was yes, he would look at you. If it was no, he'd look away. That was the only thing about his body that he had any consistent control over. And so my sister went to work for the Wallach family, and she became Ben's voice and Ben's, she knew what Ben wanted, okay? And she could just read Ben, and they go to school together, and he could do schoolwork, and like she would tell him, you know, this is what it is, and they could do schoolwork. And you would see him around town in his wheelchair, and he would have he always had a bandana tied around his neck because he was always drooling all the time. And so she would make like him a Scooby-Doo bandana, and then she would make a matching dress, okay? And she was just Ben, and Ben was her, and that's who they were. And so she would bring him to vacation Bible school, and we knew them and so on, somewhat. And the morning that Kendra was born, the day before, you ladies heard this yesterday, but the day before she was born, in the church newsletter we got, was the story, Welcome to Holland. Many of you are probably familiar with that. And I just read that the day before. And so after Kendra was born, I relayed this story to my wife and was telling her about that. And I stayed around, usually when a child was born, you know, the baby's born and I would go get the kids and we would go do things. I would kind of take care of the kids and my wife would be at the hospital. And this time I just hung out a lot more at the hospital together, and we kind of grieved, I guess would be a word for that. But I noticed while I was there that Ben's van was outside. And so I knew that Ben was around the hospital somewhere. So I went looking for Ben, the special needs boy, and I found his mom downstairs in the therapy department, and because Ben was lots of work. And so I sat down beside Melissa and I said, we had a baby girl last night. Oh, good. And I said, and she has Down syndrome. And Melissa's not a believer, but Melissa almost jumped for joy. She was so excited for us. She was just pumped. And I said, and there's this story about Welcome to Holland. And she's like, oh yeah. She said, I have that in a frame over Ben's bed. And she went home that day and she brought the picture from over Ben's bed. We said, no, this is yours from Ben. No, she says, I can get another one. This one's for you. We still have that. My wife showed that to you ladies yesterday. But what made the difference? See, before I could talk to Melissa, and I could talk to her, and I could sympathize with her or help them, but we had just entered her world. We had just entered the world of special needs. We had just been handed a rod. And God said, here's a way to use what I have just given you. The morning Kendra was born, or that day sometime, Miriam, a young girl from our community, came. They attended our church some. And she was 21, I think, at the time, and she had a sister. And I can still distinctly remember her standing there holding Kendra. And she said, your family will change. Your family will be different. She says, good. And you know, it did. Our family did change. All of you can attest to that. Your children relate to other special needs children in different ways. They're more empathetic. We had youth camp one year. Our speaker brought his son along. And afterwards, Calvin said, you know, tell your son, Carl, thanks for noticing our son. Because who was there? It was Kendra's brother who had learned about this, and he reached out to other people with challenges in life. Someone mentioned here yesterday that they were sitting at the ice cream shop and there was a lady with makeup and tattoos and whatever, and he noticed she had a special needs child, and he thought of going and talking to her, but he didn't. But then she noticed that he had a child with Down syndrome, and she came and talked to him. And you know what? There are lots of people. I was in Cabela's one time. Like, I'm just looking, okay? Like, I'm not, like, on the lookout, but I notice, okay? So I'm in Cabela's one time, and all of a sudden I said, I think that little guy over there has Down syndrome, you know? And so I'm peering around the corner, and I think so. Like, you'd really hate to walk up and say, does your child have Down syndrome? No. It's like, well, that would be a bad thing to say. But so you want to make sure. But if they do, like, I want to be the first one there and say, guess what? I'm like you. And I just want to encourage you, and God bless you as you raise your child. Like, that's the door we have. And you didn't have that door before. You didn't have that rod before. And so I often sidle up to that special need parent and say, I'm in this too. And to be a light in that way. We're in a different box than other people are. But we can serve the people in our box. Okay, I often think of boxes, and we put ourselves in, okay, we're in the American box, we're in the Mennonite box, we're in the foster care box, we're in the adoption box, and we're also in the special needs box. And you know what? You can peer in the box, you can encourage the people in the box, you can bring food to the people in the box, but until you're in the box, you don't really understand. And we're in the box. And we have a way to reach out to the world around us and to understand. When Kendra was going to therapy and so on, the public school had a special needs meal that they would have once a month, I think, kind of a carry-in deal or whatever. I don't know what your schools are like. Our public school is like, we went there, we took our rod that the Lord gave us, and we used it, and we went there, but they're not really places of, they weren't places of encouragement to us, okay? But we took the opportunity and we said, okay, let's go and minister to the people there. I couldn't have before, but now we can. Like I said, Kendra thought she wanted to teach school. God had a different plan for her. Our oldest daughter, when she was looking for a job, I told her she could go to work at Hardee's. And she says, I don't want to be working fast food. Like, I don't want to do that. And I said, well, the manager there is a professing Christian, and he just loved it that our daughter was there. And Katina wasn't so sure she wanted to be there. And she said, she'll never be as good as Krista. Well, she worked there. And our girls made Hardee's a mission field. That is the purpose of working at Hardee's. And they, even now when they're gone, when they come home, they go see Lisa, the manager of Hardee's, not because she's just a friend, but because they're praying for her, okay? They have a burden for Lisa and a burden for the people that they work with. Someone was telling me the other day, this manager, she said, you know, Krista first came there and she wasn't quite sure how she'd handle life, you know, and then one day they found out that this young man was talking about how he was using marijuana, and she didn't take long to figure out that Krista could handle herself, and she did okay. But you know what? That young man became a Christian a couple years later. My daughter went to Grenada and whatever. She came back, got married. At his wedding, he was at that wedding. And I went up to him and I said, so I heard you became a Christian. He's like, hey, the day is about the wedding, not about me. He says, but, and he just launched and told me his testimony and how God had talked to him. And he was, and at his baptism, it wasn't a Mennonite church, but at his baptism, his testimony was that the first person he heard about Jesus Christ was from Krista Zook, working at Hardee's. And so Katina goes to Ireland. She's over there helping Grant. And my wife told Lisa, the manager at Hardee's, she's like, sorry, she says, I only have two daughters. I'm all out of daughters now. And so, and Lisa says, oh, no, you don't. You have another one. And so Kendra goes to Hardee's one day a week, 3 hours, 11 to 2, And you know what? The light is still in Hardee's. The light has not left. Kendra is her own little sunbeam, her smile, and she's whipping around there, wiping tables and wiping trays, and, you know, maybe not, she's not slow and efficient. She's fast and however you want to put that. But she's doing it, okay? And she's taking the rod. She is taking what she can do. She came the other day. She came home, and sometimes she'll come home and say, "Well, I met so-and-so today at work, you know, and one of my customers or whatever." The other day she came home and she said, "There was a bunch of people came in today. They all talked funny and giving everybody hugs. It was a special needs workshop in town." But she noticed that. And you know what? One thing your child can do is give hugs. And I'm a little like you. We've had to curb that a little bit and give some direction on that. But you know what? They love people. And that is what God has given them that they can do. So what do you have in your hand this morning? God has given us a position. He has placed us in a spot where we have something to offer. And we have a rod that is useful in taking the gospel to the world. And we have a God who gives grace for the journey. The journey's not easy, we all know that. But we have a God who gives grace for that. So may we not be like Moses with his excuses and why do I have to do this? But may we be like Isaiah and take up the rod and say, "Here I am, Lord, send me." God bless you.